I've got to tell you, this summer, every time I come to church, I look at the bulletin, this fear goes over me. Because I look at the announcements in there, and every time, every week, there's this Monday night madness at the Morgan's house. And then I see this very comforting parenthetical, 1805 Mustang. And I say, yes, that's Adrian and Kenzie's house and not my house that's going to take place at. So if you will, turn to Luke chapter 15. That's where we're going to be today, and I apologize, a couple weeks ago, actually probably a month ago, Brian had just come out of surgery a few days after that. If you remember, he's still kind of on drugs, and he calls me and says, will you preach for me? I'm going to be gone to do a wedding in Houston in a few weeks, and he said, it's Father's Day weekend. Will you preach that weekend? And I said, yeah, I can do that. And so we talked a bit about that and what to do, and we kind of hit on this text. And thought, boy, that'd be a great kind of tie into Father's Day, our great Father, loving Father. And so if you know me, the next few days and week, I kind of started putting together my thoughts for that and kind of had it all mapped out. And then he gets off drugs and he calls me and he says, hey, I told you the wrong week. It's the week after Father's Day. And so I said, well, what are we going to do? And so we talked about it and stuff, said, well, let's just go ahead and go with it. And then last week, Father's Day, Brent Collier does the communion thoughts, did an awesome job, has his son up here, and he talks about this father in Luke 15, and it's just incredible and emotional, and I'm sitting there thinking, man, that's awesome, I got nothing to add to that. And Brian even then went to Luke 15, kind of in his response time, and went to that, so I walk up to Brian Doyle afterwards, okay, what do I do next week? And they convinced me, just go ahead and do what you planned on doing. Don't worry about it, just go ahead and do it. Of course, then I realized neither one of them are here today, so they didn't really care what I do today. But we are in Luke chapter 15, and let me begin by telling you three things I'm not going to talk about this morning. Isn't that a crazy way to start a lesson? But I'm going to talk about three things I'm not going to talk about. First of all, in chapter 15, verse 2, he says, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. Just hear him muttering that. You know, it's interesting to me that Jesus was the most holy man that ever walked the face of the earth. And yet the most unholy were attracted to him. And that's so interesting. And I wonder, is that true of us? And for the most part, it's probably not. And I wonder, why is it? And most of the time, we kind of have our excuse for that. Or maybe we wouldn't say our holiness, but our goodness. You know, I used to do those things. I don't do that anymore. Therefore, those people don't hang out with me anymore. You know, I wonder if the reason sinners are not attracted to us is not because we are holy, but because we're very religious. Jesus was absolutely holy. And I'm convinced he was not at all religious. We need to talk about that. But we're not going to talk about that today. Secondly, as you go through these stories, you have this story of the shepherd who has 100 sheep, and the 99 are found and the one is lost. And he leaves the 99 and goes to the one. And that's amazing to us. That doesn't fit our Western culture kind of concepts of value, you know? Most of us, our kids go take a test and they get 99 questions right and they miss one. That's awesome. That's fantastic. You know, that's an A. Several years ago, Billy knows how this is, I fed some cattle. I don't recommend that experience for anyone. And I can tell you, if we'd only had a 1% death loss, I would have been tickled, you know. And then he goes to this next story of this widow lady who has 10 coins and she loses one. And she does this incredible thing. She lights a lamp to look for the coin. And what I think he's telling us in that is that here she is. She's probably using more value, more money's worth in fuel to look for this coin than maybe that coin is even worth. And that doesn't make sense to us. You know. But I think that's a problem in churches across our land. We use probably most of our time, talent, and resources, huge majority of it, 80% at least, most have said, maybe 90 or even higher percentage of our time, talent, and resources, and emphasis on the found, the 99, and very, very little on the lost of those. So we're not going to talk about that today, but I'm going to tell you, we need to talk about that sometime. Thirdly, the last thing I'm going to talk about is the emphasis you see in this story on the small, on the one. Jesus tells also this story in Matthew chapter 18, this little parable, or similar parable, about the shepherd who had the 99 and lost the one and went and left the 99 to go to the one. Okay? And when he tells that, that whole Matthew 18 text is in the concept of the small. Does that make sense? He talks about these little ones, children, who reflect the very nature of the kingdom and how important they are. And he says, I don't want to lose any of them. And then he goes into this story, and then he talks about, if your brother has something against you, go to him, just the two of you, and work that out. And if you can't, bring one other and work through that. And only then go to the church. And I'm not sure we understand what he's talking about, the concept of the church there. It's probably small rather than large. And then he goes and he says, if two or three of you are together in my name, I'll be with you. See the small there? And if you ask for anything in my name, I'll give it to you. But I think we suffer sometimes from what I call an Acts 2:1 versus an Acts 2:46 mentality. See, in Acts 2 verse 1, he said they were all in one place, right? And we know what happens. That Peter speaks and the Spirit moves and we have 3,000 added to the church that day. And I think most of us, if that happened today, we would immediately say, boy, we got to do this again, quick. Or next week or next month or next year, we get the same speaker, get the same place, have the right music, all that kind of thing, and maybe it'll happen again. And it's interesting, if you look through the rest of Acts, God never moves like that again in that way. And in verse 46 of Acts chapter 2, you see he says, and they continued to meet daily in the temple courts and in their homes, and they broke bread and they worshiped, and God added to them as those were being saved. You see what God's saying? He took this incredible movement that started big and immediately took it small. So if we want to grow God's way, I wonder, we've got to get small. And that's why we continue to call you, invite you, beg you to small, intimate, authentic groups in which transformation can happen and attraction to others will take place. We need to talk about this, but we're not going to talk about it today. Okay, so here's what I want to talk about. Let's go to Luke chapter 15, verse 11. Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. And not long after that, the youngest son got up, got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he'd spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. And he ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven, against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe, put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. I do want to talk about four things. The first one is this, and we kind of talked about it. Brian in his article talked about it. You know, these stories in this chapter 15 are really not about the lost sheep or the lost coin or the lost son. It's about the father, about the shepherd, about the woman, and about the father and the heart of God that we see in each of those. So when we look at this and we look at this little parable and you see this earthly father, you are seeing the eternal father. Number two, in verses 11 through 13, you see an incredible thing. You see a father that loved enough to let him go. To let him go. There's probably never a more rebellious son in all of history. I mean, when you think about it, when he comes to them and he says, give me my share of the inheritance, you know what he's really saying? Father, I wish you were dead and I had my money. That's what I want. And yet the father lets him go. He gives it to him and lets him go. You know, there's some things about parenting I want us to see in this too. And please understand, it's not because I figured this out. I didn't. I struggled through with this just like the rest of you. But I think there's some parenting concepts in this story too that may be good for us to hear. Some of those are, number one, you cannot force love. You can't force your children to love you, and you can't force them to love God as much as you would want. But I tell you what you can do, and we are called to do, is we can do all we can consistent with the nature of God to inspire our children to love God and honor Him with their lives. Now, when you do that, remember this. Again, you can't control them. It's about relational influence in which you invite them to this and you do everything you can to influence this. You can live before them and with them as best we can, knowing that if we don't do that very well, it will not matter what you teach them. See, it's not an inspirational speech that's going to make the difference. It's an inspirational life lived in front of them. Now, inspirational life is not a perfect life. You understand? Because none of us can do that. Maybe it's a life that's more confessional on a regular basis and honest and open and authentic. And remember this, when your kids do something well, don't take all the credit, and when they mess up, don't take all the blame. This ought to be encouraging to you when you realize that this father who represents the very heart of God and the very fatherly concepts of God has a lost son. And Father God, eternal God throughout all history and always will have children who He loves and cares for that will turn away from Him. And if you look back to Adam and Eve, that very beginning children in chapter 2 and 3 of Genesis, and He was right there with them, walking with them, and they still turned from Him. So understand that God knows and He understands when your children struggle with this. But at the same time, parents, don't let pride get in our way and get the best of us. I wonder sometimes when we're disappointing our kids, it's because of our own pride. And don't play the guilt card. And it's easy to do. And it doesn't work very well. You know, I hear all the time, I just love my kids and I want what's best for them. Of course you do. But be real careful, because the next thing you can step into is playing that guilt card if you're not careful. Threats won't do you much good either, and you don't see that in this story. But kids, understand for a minute, there's a difference between disclosing honestly and truthfully real consequences and speaking threats. But that is a fine line, and walk it carefully and lovingly. You know, the nature of God is that God loves you enough to give you the freedom to choose to not love Him. That's hard to believe. That's unbelievable. I wish God hadn't done that in some ways, but He did, and He does. And so one of the things, too, parents realize is that one of the results of that is that God will not make your child love Him even though you're praying that He will. Now, hear me carefully. I'm not saying don't pray for your kids. Pray for your kids. Pray for them all the time. And God is, I believe, doing incredible things to draw your children and those you love to Him. But He's also made them free agents to choose whether or not to follow Him. Okay, number three. We see in here a father that we can go back to. When he came to his senses, you see what happened? He went back to his dad. He remembers the kind of person that his father is, the kind of person that even in a famine, his servants had plenty to eat. He cared for them and treated them well. This is the father you can go back to. Do you know that no matter what you have done, you have an eternal father that is good and that loves you and will immediately welcome you back? Number four, he had a father that longs for and looks for us to come back. It says in verse 20, that while he was a long way off, the Father saw him. I'm going to tell you, you don't see things normally that are a long way off unless you're looking for them. Did you know that? This father, I believe, was a father that was looking for his son probably every day. I can just imagine as he sat there and looked over the horizon and he saw a figure coming over the horizon and he wondered, is that him? And he watched him carefully and intently as he got closer and closer, and then, no, it's not. And then the next day, here came another one, and he wondered, is that him? And no, it's not. And then that day he came, and he saw that figure coming on the horizon. And, you know, just like our sons, Terry and I joke all the time, you can see them from a long ways off, and just by how they carry themselves, you know it's them. You know what I mean? And he saw him, and he wondered. He walks just like. And he's just about the right height. And you see what he does here? He ran to him and threw his arms around him and he kissed him. I want you to also see what's not there. There were no lectures. There was no, I told you so. There was no confessions first, no probation, no grounding. In fact, it's interesting here. The son said, make me a servant. And the father said, no, you're my son. This is the one time in the story when the father directly contradicts what his son said and what his son wanted. Isn't that awesome? This is our eternal father. He loves you enough to let us go and then to be right there, immediately right there when we want to return. He filled the space that the son had created between him and his father. You see that? He ran to him and filled that space. That's the way our God is. I don't care what you think you've gone through and how hard it is that you may not be able to go back to God. I want to tell you, the minute you turn back to him, you're going to find out he was not far away the whole time. He was right there waiting and ready to run and put his arms around you and kiss you. As I was preparing for this, I saw a video on YouTube I want to share with you for a few minutes. I watched it. I had Terry watch it. She cried. That doesn't surprise you probably. But it's a modern day adaptation of this beautiful story. And I hope you'll just enjoy it and hear it and watch it with all your heart. That's the kind of father I want to be, because that's the kind of father I have. I'd like to ask our elders and ministers and their wives to go to their places. And we have this time where we ask if you want to respond, and we try to make it as easy as possible. You could be heading out the back like you were leaving and just veer over to a shepherd or come to the front or whatever. And I don't know how you need to respond today. Maybe it's, as parents, we need to go and have some confessory kind of conversations with our kids, or write some needed letters, or just change to parent more like our eternal parents. Maybe you need to realize that no matter what you have done, if you're this lost son, you can come home to this incredible father. Dave Gibbons tells a story in his book, The Monkey and the Fish, about his father who was very much involved in church and went through a divorce, had an affair, left family, left church, left everything. Late in his life, he got cancer and he came back. And David was visiting with him in the hospital. He says, you know, I've been reading my Bible a lot. He said, really? He said, yeah, 5-10 chapters a day. And Dave asked him, he says, what is God telling you as you're reading that? And he said, God has been telling me that I've been away way too long. And started crying. If you've been away way too long, you can come back today. Can't imagine in this group, if there's even just one, this group, the 99, would celebrate that one coming. If you need help in coming back, if you need to be baptized into Christ, you know, in the first century, some groups of Christians started as a tradition when someone was baptized and came out of the water, they put a new robe on them, kind of like this son got a new robe. A way of God saying, you can start over as my son. If you need prayer, if you need guidance, if you need us to help you go to someone that you need to reconcile with, we want to help you do that. Any way we can help you, would you please come as we stand and sing?